ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Going to continue Canto 3, Chapter 1, and now reading text 44. Vidura is glorifying Krishna. You know from Canto 1, Chapter 7, when Shaunaka Rishi hears from Suta Goswami that the best of all means of elevation is to hear the topics glorifying the Lord. He says, please glorify topics in relation to the Supreme Lord. And what's the first topic that's spoken about? Canto 1, Chapter 7. Pandavas. And Prabhupada explains, what? He asked to hear Krishna Katha, now he's talking about the Pandavas. But then anything that's to do with the Pandavas is in relation to Krishna. So speaking about the devotees of the Lord is the same as speaking about Krishna, because their lives of the devotees of the Lord is exclusively in relation to Krishna. And the same thing is happening here. Vidura is inquiring about his relatives, but he's not just, oh, how's this relative, that relative? He's interested in Krishna. So after speaking for a little bit, or inquiring a little bit about his relatives, immediately it goes to Krishna. And once he starts speaking about Krishna, it's hard to stop speaking about Krishna. What to speak of what that's doing to Uddhava, who's hearing topics inquired of him about Krishna. When Uddhava begins to reply, it's three chapters. He can't stop. All about Krishna. And that's just third canto. We're just getting rolling. The whole of the Bhagavatam is in relation to Krishna. Therefore, it's Bhagavat Purana. But when we hear about Krishna, we're going to hear about the devotees of Krishna, because they're in relation to Krishna too. So in this verse, Vidura is going to speak about the reason for Krishna's appearance in this world. If you recall, one of the six questions asked by the sages in chapter 1, what was the reason for Krishna's appearance in this world? So he's going to speak about it again. But he speaks about it in the apparent reason, but then he speaks about it in the less apparent reason. Like apparently, Krishna appeared to annihilate the miscreants. Vinashaya cha duskritam. You know that verse? So Krishna comes for three reasons. And what are those three reasons? He does, what's the first one? Kill the demons. Second reason? Restore the principles of Dharma. What's the third reason? Protect the devotees. So here Vidura is going to speak about the reason for Krishna's appearance. One of the three reasons for Krishna's appearance is to annihilate miscreants. We just heard before, this morning, about Krishna didn't right away kill Duryodhana and all the others that did some abominable activities. He did eventually, but he didn't immediately. But he's going to go a little more deeper than that as to the deeper reason why Krishna appears. Or say it the other way. Yeah, the other way is to say, actually Krishna doesn't do anything at all. Or when he does things, he does so through the agency of his potencies. In that sense, he's doing nothing at all. His potencies are doing everything. But he's simply performing pastime, which is very different. It's totally distinct from what we do, or the tiny living entity. We do things for self-betterment, and Krishna does things just because they're his pastimes. And he cares about his devotees, and so Krishna appears for that reason. So let's hear how Prabhupada explains the verse. Here's the verse. The appearance of the Lord is manifested for the annihilation of the upstarts. Ajasya. So, Jasya and Ajasya, the unborn. Krishna is unborn. Ajopi, son. Ajasya. He who is unborn, Ajasya. Janmotpata, Nashanaya. He takes his birth. He was unborn, makes his appearance. And what is his purpose? Utpata Nashanaya. Nasha. He destroys. Utpata, the upstarts. He appears to annihilate the miscreants. He who doesn't take birth, takes birth, or appears to take birth, to destroy the upstarts. But Karmani Akartur. He does nothing. His activities are transcendental and are enacted for the understanding of all persons. He's disclosing. Krishna is disclosing, I am like this. He's directly explaining it to Arjuna. I do this, I do that, I do this, but I do nothing. Sounds like double talk. I do so many things, but of all these things, no work is binding upon me. In fact, I'm doing nothing. It's all being carried out by my energy. We're going to hear from Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, since the Lord is transcendental to all material modes, what purpose could he serve by coming to earth? There's a curious statement, an enigmatic statement. What is Vidura saying here? Prabhupada's purport. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satyananda Vigraha Brahma Samhita 5.1. The form of the Lord is eternal, blissful, and all-knowing. His so-called birth is therefore an appearance only, just like the birth of the sun on the eastern horizon. Does the sun take birth every morning? It appears every morning, but is it taking birth every morning? So Krishna's appearing is like the sun appearing on the eastern horizon every morning. His birth does not, like that of the living entities, take place under the influence of material nature. And the bondage of the reactions of past deeds. So with that understanding follows the next understanding. As his birth is transcendental, his activities are also transcendental. That's what he says next. His works and activities are independent pastimes and are not subject to the reactions of material nature in Bhagavad Gita 4.14. Bhagavad Gita 4.14. It is said, Namam karmani limpanti name karma palesbraha itimam yo vijanati karma virna sabhadyate. 4.14. The law of karma enacted by the Supreme Lord for the living entities cannot be applicable to him. Common sense, right? Material nature is under his adhyaksha, his supervision. Material nature is under his supervision. He's not supervised by his material nature, which is under his supervision. That would be contradiction. It's under, the material nature is under his supervision. He's not under the material nature. So the material nature is acting on the tiny living entity, but the material nature is not acting upon the one who's controlling material nature. So he performs activities, but his activities are transcendental. And there's nothing binding upon him when he appears. And there's not, he's not forced to accept a material body. He doesn't accept a material body according to his past deeds. There's nothing that forces him to appear. He appears simply out of his own will. In the fourth chapter, Krishna is describing his setting up the standards for duties for the conditioned souls. Text 12. Men in this world desire success and fruitive activities, and therefore they worship the demigods. Quickly, of course, men get results from fruitive work in this world. Next. So, according to the three modes of material nature and the work associated with them, the four divisions of human society are created by me. Chatur Varnam Maya Shrishtam Guna Karma Vivagasha. Krishna creates this system. But after saying he's created the system, he says, I'm the non-doer. Although I'm the creator of this system, you should know that I am yet the non-doer, being unchangeable. There is no work that affects me. That's this 4.14. Nor do I aspire for the fruits of action. One who understands this truth about me also does not become entangled in the fruit of reactions of work. Chapter 4. So this is in the Janma Karma Chame Divyam. It's part of that understanding. Krishna's activities of Maya Shrishtam, of creating something, creating the four divisions of social and occupational life. He does it through the agency of his potencies, but he himself does nothing. Prabhupada gives the worldly example of a man, an industrialist, who has many factories, and he's off on the golf course hitting a little ball with a stick. So while he's playing golf on the golf course, everything that's happening in the factory is happening because he said for it to happen in the factory. Nothing happens without his sanction, although he's off on the golf course. And Prabhupada's point is, if that's true for a worldly person, what to speak of God? Everything is happening by his adhyaksha, by his superintendence. But he's not busy running around, you know, superintending everything. It's all happening by his potencies. So he's the original cause of all causes. As such, he's the non-doer, because it's all being carried out by his potencies or by his expansions. And I one should know I am yet the non-doer. And one who knows this truth about me will also not be entangled in the fruit of reactions of work. So, the law of karma enacted by the Supreme Lord for the living entities cannot be applicable to him, nor has the Lord any desire to improve himself by activities like those of ordinary living beings. Krishna doesn't need self-improvement books. There's nothing to improve upon. There's nothing that he's lacking. You can't say that about a living entity, because living entity is tiny. Whatever the living entity may have or be, there's something less than complete. So there's always improving. But for Krishna, there's no improving. He's complete. So when Krishna does something, it's not there's something outside of himself that's lacking and he needs to do something so he can feel fulfilled. The opposite is true for the living entity. We want happiness. To get happiness, we need something outside of ourselves to at least we think we do, to complete that hankering for happiness. So we get a friend. We want friendship. Or get some money because we want things money can buy. Etc. But for Krishna, there is nothing outside of himself. Everything is within him. So he doesn't need to do something to make himself feel complete. He's already complete. So why does he do anything? He could just then vibrate or something, twinkle, radiate, just be, you know, Krishna. But he's loving. So he does things in relation to those living entities, especially those who are loving in their disposition towards him. He's reciprocating their loving mood. But it's not because there's something outside of himself that he's feeling the need for. The Lord is already full of opulence, all strength, all fame, all beauty, all knowledge, all renunciation. Why should he desire improvement? So this is, Prabhupada is going more deeply into what Vidura is saying. Krishna came to annihilate the demons, but he actually did nothing. He who was unborn appeared. He who doesn't do anything did something. So what's going on? He's disclosing his identity. That's what's within the verse. His activities are transcendental and are enacted for the understanding of all persons. Of course, all persons need the capacity to understand, or they need the enlightenment from reading Srimad Bhagavatam. Then one can understand. Krishna is simply enjoying pastimes. One should always discriminate between the activities of the Lord and those of the ordinary living beings. Thus one may come to the right conclusion regarding the Lord's transcendental position. And by coming to that right understanding, one's freed from bondage. Just like that. The Prabhupada quotes the verse from Brahma Samhita. Karmani nirdahati kintucha bhakti bhajam. Not only that Krishna doesn't need to do something to improve himself, it's the other way around. It's vice versa. By Krishna's doing things, he's improving the lives of others. The Lord minimizes or nullifies the reactionary influence of the devotee's past deeds. By the devotee seeing Krishna's wonderful pastimes and understanding Krishna has nothing to do, but look what he's doing. He has nothing to achieve. He has no need. But look at what Krishna is doing. How wonderful are Krishna's pastimes. This contemplation of the devotee frees them. Karmadi nirdehito kintu cha bhakti bhajam. The next paragraph, there's two more. So the next paragraph, Prabhupada is saying, the fruitive workers and the liberationists, they're attracted to Krishna too. And the devotee, they're attracted to Krishna too. How is it that the non-devotee or the materialist, the fruitive worker, is attracted to Krishna? The Lord always acts in favor of the devotees, and therefore the ordinary men who are fruitive actors or seekers of salvation may be attracted to the Lord when he acts as the protector of the devotees. So I'm Mr. Fruitive Worker. I want happiness. And I hear about how Krishna protects his devotees. I get my material thing going here, and I'll just take shelter of Krishna and he'll protect me. It's mixed devotion, but some people think like that. I want to become prosperous, but I'd like it to be safe. So I'll become a religious man and prosper. And God will protect me. The fruitive actors can attain their goals by devotional service, and the salvationists can also attain their goals in a life of devotional service to the Lord. I want to become free. I want to become liberated. I hear the devotees have become free and liberated, so let me become a devotee. It's the motivations in both cases, they're selfish, but that desire can be fulfilled also through the realm of bhakti. But the devotee doesn't have those desires. He doesn't have those aspirations. The devotees do not want the fruitive results of their work, nor do they want any kind of salvation. They relish the glorious superhuman activities of the Lord, such as lifting of Govardhan Hill. Tired? Or his killing of the demon Putana in infancy. Krishna is all attractive, so he attracts the karmis, the gyanis, and the bhaktas. But in so doing, as much as they become attracted to him, they become freed from the bondage of their fruitive works. The karmi can become free from the bondage of their fruitive works. The salvationist can become free from the cycle of birth and death. If Krishna can give those benedictions to the fruitive worker and the salvationist, how is it he can have a material body that's forced by laws of karma to take birth and his activities are mundane like ours? Not so. It's reverse logic. Rather than taking the statement of scripture, it's just taking that says Krishna's activities are transcendental. Here's some evidence. How can they be material? And that his actions are bound by the laws of karma. So, here's the wrap-up paragraph. It's short. The secondary purpose of his appearance is to annihilate the upstart asuras and to stop the nonsense of atheistic propaganda by less intelligent persons. That's the secondary purpose. Primary purpose, causeless mercy. The meaningful appearance of the Lord is always distinct from ordinary birth. Meaningful appearance of the Lord. There's a purpose behind his appearance, and it's not the external is or the secondary is vinashaya chuduskritam, or in this verse Pata Nashanaya, Janma Pata Nashanaya. He comes to annihilate the upstarts. The meaningful appearance of the Lord is always distinct from ordinary birth. Even the pure devotees have no connection with the material body, and certainly the Lord, who appears as he is in his Satchit Ananda Vigraha form, is not limited by a material form. So when Krishna does things, that the what we're to gain from this verse is, when contemplating Krishna's activity or activities, the material tendency is to think of them in terms of our own material experience or material experience of those around us. That's natural. We're being advised to not think like that when Krishna did or didn't do certain things. It was fully transcendental. Fully transcendental. Bearing that in mind, so Krishna came, the specific example here, Krishna came to curb the influence of the demoniac upstarts, to annihilate them. But we should remember, he didn't do anything at all. Rather, he's acting through the agency of his potencies, and he's just performing pastime. In the Kaliya Dhamana Leela, the residents of Vrindavan, because of their deep attachment for Krishna, when they saw Krishna in the coils of the Kaliya serpent, they were in such anxiety and distress. And Balaram was just smiling. He understood Krishna's just having pastime. He's enjoying. He's not in any danger. No possibility of his being in danger. But Mother Jasoda couldn't think like that. Nanda Maharaj didn't think like that. The cowherd boys didn't think like that. The cows didn't think like that. But Balaram was very clear. Krishna's just enjoying. And that's what he was doing. He was increasing and increasing and increasing the feelings of the residents of Vrindavan, intensifying their feelings. And then he slipped out of the coils of Kaliya and subdued the pride of Kaliya, freed him completely from his enviousness, and accepted his praises and the wives of the Nagapatnis, and came out of the lake. He wanted the lake to become free from the poison of the Kaliya serpent, told them, go home. Pastime. Very attractive pastime. Like in Ramayana. Part of the beauty of Ramayana is that Ram's lamentation for the loss of Sita seems so human-like. It's very easy to identify with the character. And then Lakshman, who felt so hurt by the words of Sita that he did what Ram told him not to do. Don't leave Sita, whatever you do. And he left Sita. He couldn't bear the scorn of Sita's words. He told Sita, he's Ram. Nothing can harm Ram. It's a Rakshasa's trick. Don't pay any attention. But she spoke such cruel words and threatened to take her life if Lakshman didn't go and rescue Ram, who needs no rescue. So it's so human-like. And according to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he calls this Brahma Vilas, seeming errors. B-H-R-A-M-A means it's one of the defects of a conditioned soul is to make mistakes. Brahma Vilas, pastimes of seeming error. Ram went chasing after Marich, the golden deer. He's the Supreme Lord. Lakshman went to find him. And Sita also became deceived by Ravan. How is this happening? Seeming error. It's all a pastime of the Lord. So he can enjoy the pastime of separation and love. And we can understand what Prabhupada said, the moral of that for us is one should not become overly attached. Because when one is overly attached, one has to suffer. And all three of them had to suffer because they became overly attached. So we hear it and we go, yes, yes, and then we get overly attached and we suffer. But because it's the pastime of Ram, just by hearing it again and again, we become elevated. And we become free from that tendency to be overly attached. By becoming attached to the Supreme Lord. That's the purpose of Krishna's appearance. That's what Vidura is disclosing. And he's attached. And because he's attached, he's also beyond the modes of nature. And he's able to understand Krishna perfectly well. And he can disclose it very, very beautifully. And the non-devotee doesn't get it, just goes, phew. Mythology, fairy tale, sentiment, blindly chasing sense gratification and mental speculation. But the devotee relishes this subject. Wait till you hear what happens as what's happening in Vidura's, in Uddhava's heart, and when he begins speaking, it's like Niagara Falls, just pouring and pouring and pouring. Okay. I'll end there and see if you have some comments or questions. You have very meticulous handwriting. Very nice. Don't be embarrassed. It's very nice. When Lord Chaitanya saw the handwriting, without even reading the word, just seeing the handwriting of Jiva Goswami, he said, the handwriting of Jiva Goswami looks like strings of pearls. At one of the presentations at our GBC meeting was made by Hari Sori Prabhu, and he's just begun a library of Vaishnava literature, not just the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust literature, but Vaishnava literature in general. And he was showing us in slides in a PowerPoint presentation one recent gift that he received of writings, original writings of Bhaktivinoda Thakur that have, some of them have been translated and some of them have never been translated. Some even were like postcards of his sister to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and you know, original manuscripts written in his handwriting. And his handwriting is also very beautiful. Just, you know, just seeing that, I don't know what it's Bengali because I can't read it, but just the handwriting is very beautiful. Such an elegant person as Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And volumes and volumes, they showed pictures that, like, you know, a room filled with boxes. just had manuscripts, original, because from the manuscript comes something printed, so the original manuscripts. So they're digitally recording them and storing them in digital form and then, you know, carefully preserving the paper so it will last as long as paper can last. Eventually the paper is going to fall apart because it's biodegradable. Original writings and very beautiful handwriting. Those were the sandarbhas of Jiva Goswami were the notes of Gopal Bhatta Goswami from when he was a small boy to the time he left Sri Rangam and went to Vrindavan. He kept very careful notes on his study of the scripture, and that's what he gave to Jiva Goswami to make into the sandarbhas. Okay, any comments? Right.
Now, this understanding of transcendental nature, as I understand, is not an intellectual understanding.
That's correct.
So, if one actually understands transcendental nature, it means already he's on the transcendental platform. Hmm.
Is this a chicken and the egg question? Yes? Which comes first? Being in the transcendental position or having transcendental understanding and then coming to the transcendental position? Well, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that transcendental knowledge is already within each one of us. He has even a term for it. Svatak Siddha Gyan. Just like Krishna says, excuse me, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that Krishna Prema is already within the heart of the living being. So transcendental knowledge is also already within the heart of the living being. Both simply need to be brought out. And there's a process of bringing them out called Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. That's the process of bringing them out. Or Cheta Darpanam Arjanam. The cleansing of the heart, cleansing of consciousness by hearing and chanting. So gradually that transcendental knowledge awakens. It's not an intellectual event or an intellectual exercise, or doesn't require intellectual acumen. It requires Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, enacted from the heart, enacted upon the heart. Then one can get transcendental knowledge. And so it's gradual, but not, it's not intellectual. Does that help? Yes?
Well, this idea of Brahma Vilas could be misused by the...
Yes, by cheaters. One should be very careful to avoid cheaters and rascals. But sure, it can be. But because something can be misused doesn't mean throw it away. A surgical knife can be misused, but we don't throw it away. We use it carefully. Or a razor for shaving the face. It can be misused, but we use it carefully. Yes.
In the morning you said that Lord Krishna did not chastise the Kauravas and other miscreants, but he waited for the Kurukshetra battle so that he could destroy all of them together.
Yeah.
And now you're mentioning about seeming errors, Brahma Vilas, in the pastimes of the Lord. But Bhishma remaining silent in the assembly of the Kurus when Mother Draupadi was destroyed,
Yeah. Attempted
to destroy.
Yeah.
Does it belong to this?
Yeah. Well, it's what Prabhupada writes in... You've read it, I'm sure, in the first canto, is Krishna wanted to show that whoever you are, even up to the point, up to the elevated position of Bhishma Dev, if you don't protect women, you'll be destroyed. Krishna wanted to show that. So he showed that through his own devotee. He remained silent. In Vedic culture, when a minister would speak or a brahmana would speak, they would bear the karma of the actions that followed their words if they were wrong. So it was very important to not be wrong. And his silence was he couldn't discriminate. I mean, Draupadi asked a very tough question. I'm the property of 5 men. How can one of them give me away or gamble me away? How am I the property of one man? And he who has already lost everything, can he then in turn lose his wife? He's already lost everything. Can somebody answer this question? They couldn't answer the question. Vidura could answer the question. And he answered it strongly. And Duryodhana was furious. And Dhritarashtra was silent. So his intelligence was taken, just as Arjuna's intelligence was taken, so that Krishna could speak Bhagavad Gita. That kind of Brahma Vilas is specific in relation to Krishna and his pastimes that are apparently contradictory. The devotee is another situation, like Maharaj Parikshit insulting a Brahmin. It was purposeful. Krishna had some purpose, and Maharaj Parikshit did like that. It's not that we don't at all get the indication that Parikshit got some radio signal, radio Krishna. Oh, Krishna just sent me a message. He wants me to do this bad thing so that the Bhagavatam can be spoken. Okay, so I'll do it. He was overwhelmed with thirst and then overwhelmed with anger and then feeling very repentant for his wrong act. Or like Narada, when his mother was bitten by the serpent, he understood this is somehow the plan of the Lord. And he accepted it that way. So a devotee, you know, it's not like Maharaj Parikshit was thinking on his way back to the palace, oh, it was a really bad thing to do, but I'm sure it was some plan of the Lord, and so I'm not going to worry about it. He was very repentant. And when word came, you've been cursed by the son of that sage, immediately was ready. This is the reaction that I'm due for my misdeed. I'm ready to accept it. In other words, like Navayovana was saying, mischievous persons can easily misuse, or at least try to misuse, the Brahma Vilas notion. The devotee who's being influenced by the Lord's internal potency will never misuse it. Although in their case it may have its application. Some mistake that's part of a plan of the Lord. King Chitraketu being cursed by Parvati. Anything else? Yes. What was the thing just before that? Did you get it?
He's saying, is this also a correct reason that they kept silent to glorify Krishna?
No. No. He became bewildered. He didn't know how to answer Draupadi's question. I mean, where does the capacity to know and to not know come from? The Supersoul inspired it, but he lost his discriminating capacity. It wasn't, oh, let me glorify Krishna so he can come and deliver Draupadi's sari unlimitedly. It was bewildered by Krishna's influence, and so he spoke nothing. Not like us, you know, we don't know, we'll say something anyways. I'm not sure, but maybe it could be this. And we can't control our speech. Bhishma can do. So he spoke nothing. It's true, what's in his heart is but one thing, to please Krishna, to glorify Krishna. But it wasn't, that was his thought process. Oh, the glorification of Krishna is I'll say nothing. Because Krishna has a pastime and he wants me to be part of that pastime, so I'll say nothing. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada.